Let's turn to 1 Kings 19, beginning at verse 15. We'll read verses 15 through 18. In these verses, we have the recommissioning of the prophet Elijah. 1 Kings 19 and verse 15. Then the Lord said to him, "Go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king over Syria. Also you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. It shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill. And whoever escapes from the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." All right, a few background notes. We've seen Elijah at his best, confronting Ahab, confronting the prophets of Baal, walking by faith in the strength of the Lord. But we've also seen Elijah at his worst, running in fear from Queen Jezebel, hiding in a cave at Mount Horeb or Mount Sinai, and then, of all things, answering God with a self-centered, bitter complaint. And this is even after God has graciously taken care of him and provided for him as he's running away, and even after God has graciously given him some great object lessons to teach him. But in verse 13, it looks like Elijah at least is moving in the right direction, even though he gives this same self-centered response, "Lord, I've been zealous for you. Everybody else is forsaking you, but I've been right on, and I'm doing the job. But nobody cares about me, and I'm the only believer left, and they're seeking to take my life." Even though he has that self-centered response, it does seem like he's moving in the right direction because he does respond to the still small voice or the gentle whispering of God, and he does show a reverent attitude by wrapping his face in his mantle or cloak and coming out of the cave to listen to the Lord. So God graciously gives Elijah the benefit of the doubt, you might say. And in these verses that we've just read, he recommissions his servant Elijah. And that brings us then to our doctrinal points for today from this portion. Doctrinal point number one, God graciously restores his servants. God graciously restores his servants. Look at verse 15. Then the Lord said to Elijah, "Go return." That's a renewed commission right there. God graciously restores his servants. The fact that Elijah is recommissioned here shows that Elijah definitely is being restored to his walk of faith with the Lord. Now, some commentaries that you read will say that Elijah is being fully restored to his walk with the Lord, but not fully restored to his place of service, because after all, Elisha is going to replace him. Well, that may be so. Well, having said that, I still think a case could be made for Elijah not being set aside in any way, because he's definitely recommissioned here. And we know that God definitely used Elijah in the future, as we'll see in the chapters to come. In this position, that Elijah's being fully restored and fully recommissioned, then these answers that God gives here in verses 15 through 17, there are answers to these questions that Elijah had about, "Lord, what are you doing? Everybody's forsaken you, and I alone am left," and so forth. Look back there at verse 14. Elijah had told God that Israel had forsaken the covenant, torn down the altars, killed the prophets. He said this, you might say, in an accusing tone of voice. "What are you doing about this, God?" Well, God answers that question. He basically says to Elijah, "Elijah, you're going to anoint Hazael king over Syria, the next king of Syria. And he is the one who will come down and attack Israel and many of the ungodly, idolatrous Israelis that you're worried about and you want to see judged, Elijah. They'll get the axe when Hazael from Syria comes down and attacks Israel." Furthermore, we see he's to anoint Jehu as the next king of Israel. You see, Elijah is concerned about that. How come Ahab and Jezebel are still in power? The Lord is answering that question right here. Jehu would replace wicked King Ahab, and he would actually be the means of getting rid of wicked Queen Jezebel. And furthermore, he would wipe out all the remaining prophets of Baal. Now, Elijah carries out these anointings by having his new servant Elisha direct this operation. You can read about that in 2 Kings 8 and 9. But now we see, furthermore, Elijah is to anoint Elisha, verse 16. Elisha, the son of Shaphat, he's going to be anointed. He will be the prophet that takes the place of Elijah in the years to come. There'll be a transition here. But now we do need to explain what is meant at the end of verse 17 when we read that whoever the sword of Hazael will not get, Jehu will kill, and whoever escapes the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. What does that mean? Elisha will kill. Did Elisha kill anyone? Well, if you want to take this literally, you could say that under Elisha's ministry, as we'll see when we get to further chapters here, you could say that it was literally fulfilled with certain things that took place under Elisha's ministry. For example, in chapter 2 of 2 Kings, you'll learn about 42 teenagers who mocked Elisha were mauled by two female bears. Well, there was some killing that went on there. Furthermore, you'll read in 2 Kings 8 about a famine that came on the land that Elisha pronounced, the famine of discipline from the Lord, and it would certainly be that many people died there. So you could take that literally, this matter of Elisha killing. But many take it figuratively in the sense of spiritual judgment. Let me just read one verse in that connection, if you're going to take it in a figurative way. Hosea chapter 6 and verse 5, where God is saying that he would have to judge the northern kingdom of Israel and how he had carried out that judgment. Hosea 6:5, therefore I have hewn or cut down them, these unbelievers, these idolaters in Israel, by the prophets. I have slain or put to death or killed them by the words of my mouth through the prophets. You see, so it could be taken in a figurative way. One more question that is answered here for Elijah. Elijah had also wrongly stated that he was the only one left in Israel. He was the only one still serving the Lord. And what about that, God? I'm the only one. Well, how does God answer that complaint? God says, no, Elijah, verse 18, I still have 7,000 knees that have not bowed to Baal and mouths that have not kissed him, that is, kissed his image. So here's the point now. Every question that Elijah raised is answered by God. Even though Elijah didn't ask them with the greatest attitude, kind of like us many times, yet what grace we see. God answers every question that Elijah had. So, back again to this matter of whether Elijah was fully recommissioned or partially recommissioned, we can't say for sure, but he certainly was fully restored to fellowship with the Lord. God graciously restores his servants. If you have lapsed in faith in any way or failed the Lord in some way, you can be sure that God is willing to graciously restore you. God graciously restores his servants. Doctrinal point number 2. God can use unbelievers to accomplish his purposes. God can use unbelievers to accomplish his purposes. Here we see that God would use two unbelievers to punish and discipline his people Israel. He would use Hazael, a pagan Syrian king, and he would use Jehu, an ungodly and ruthless king of Israel, to accomplish his purposes. God can use unbelievers to accomplish his purposes then and today. God may use unbelievers in your life to accomplish his purposes. God may use an unbelieving teacher. God may use an unbelieving fellow worker. God may use an unbelieving boss to accomplish his purposes in your life. I know God has done some things in my life in the past through some unbelieving, godless bosses that I've had. Yet God was able to use them in no uncertain terms to speak to me about some things in my life. More we could say, but let's move on to the practical application. Practical application number 1. Talk to God about your hang-ups. Talk to God about your hang-ups. We've seen that Elijah had problems or hang-ups in the faith. He couldn't figure out why God let Ahab and Jezebel remain in power. He wrongly thought that God was allowing all believers to be killed and he was left alone. I mean, he has some real hang-ups here. But at least he talked to God about it. He should have had a better attitude, as we've seen, but at least he did bring the matter before God. And he did, as we've seen, show some reverence. And he voiced his hang-ups to God. And guess what? God answered. God graciously answered. It's a great encouragement for us. Talk to God about your hang-ups. James 1:5 says, "If any one of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God." And that certainly would include our hang-ups. Bring them before God. Talk to God about them. Now, don't come with an irreverent attitude and faithless attitude, but if you're honestly hung up with some problem in the faith, something that God is doing or not doing in the world or in your life, talk to God about it. You have any hang-ups right now? You can't exactly figure out what God is doing in the world or in your life? Talk to God about your hang-ups. Practical application number 2. Are you a member of the Secret 7000 Club? Are you a member of the Secret 7000 Club? Verse 18, once again, the Lord had to tell Elijah that there were still believers there. 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, or their mouths have not kissed the image of Baal. Elijah didn't know about these believers. How come? Well, they were secret believers for the most part, afraid to publicly identify with Elijah. Are you a member of the Secret 7000 Club? Are you a secret believer? Will you be able to say this time next year, "Hey, guess what? I got through the whole year. Nobody figured out I was a Christian." Well, now, I think we have the good news and the bad news here. The good news is that God knew of the 7,000. Even though they were secret believers, unwilling to publicly testify, unwilling to publicly identify with Elijah, yet they were there, they were believers, and God knew them. And God takes note of that fact, and not just the number, and not just that they believed in their heart, but at least they put that faith into practice in the sense that they had not bowed the knee to Baal. They didn't fake it. "Oh, I'll bow the knee to Baal, but I'll be a secret believer in my heart." No, they were believers, and at least they made that part of their faith a true commitment. They did not bow the knee to Baal, nor kiss any images of Baal. So that should be an encouragement. If you're a secret believer, if you're a member of the Secret 7000 Club, well, God knows your heart. God knows that you're a true believer. And whatever evidence of faith there is in your life, God takes note of that. But the sad news, of course, is that you're not sharing Christ with a world that so desperately needs him. Elijah needed the support and testimony of these 7,000, but they were silent. Now, I'm sure you've heard this before, and maybe even from me. If you were arrested for being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Or are you a member of the Secret 7000 Club? Your public testimony is needed. Not only here at a Christian camp where it's easy, but back in your hometown, back in your neighborhood, back on your job, back on your college campus. Are you a member of the Secret 7000 Club?